Union Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news and intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversations. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the management and staff of Guardian Radio.
Good afternoon, and welcome to another exciting edition of Nailed It on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. My name is Leonard Sands, of course, and we do not have my wonderful, magnetic co-host, Debbie Deal, with us, but we do have a guest in the studio today. Debbie is unfortunately traveling, but she sends her best. Now, I gotta tell you that a lot happened today, and I'm going to try to keep the a lot that happened not to be the focus of the day, because today our guests and we're going to have a wonderful discussion. You can't plan these things. You cannot plan these things, but we can get into it, and it's going to make sense to our listening audience. So I invite everyone. It's going to be a different show today. I invite everyone to take down the numbers and participate in this conversation today. The numbers are 323-6232-325-4316, 325-4259. And from the Family Islands, it's 242-300-5720. And using our BTC Power text line, you can text in at 422-4796. Now, that being said, we are on the eve of independence. I want that to just sit in. I want the listening audience to reflect on 53 years. Now, there's a couple of things to think about when you have it 53 years. If I told you I was still doing my computations 53 years later, adding my fingers, 1 plus 1 is 2, and 2 plus 1 is 3, and 3 plus 1 is 4, and I'm using my fingers, and I'm still doing that at 53, you're going to look at me and say, yeah, some challenges you're having, or you're determining not to learn. That's one way of looking at that, at 53. What I look at 53 years old, is I count opportunities. How many opportunities did you have to learn a better, more efficient, smarter way to do things? It's not just counting. Anything. I consider how we do everything. And I tell people, if I had an opportunity to do anything 10 times, I could guarantee you one thing. I'm going to get better by the 10th time than I was on the first time. In fact, I'm going to get better at the 5th time than I was on the first time. I had 53 times. I'm going to be a rocket scientist in that space. In fact, in the world we live in, people always ascertain or convey the title of professional to anyone who's been doing anything post 10 years. Imagine 53. Now, I set all that foundational work to say this, and this is where I'm going to get the first group of people very annoyed with me, and just full disclosure, I can tell you right now, the Ministry of Public Works, I've spoken about them several times, and they're my friends. We have a very love relationship. I don't like to use the word hate. It's kind of strong. But I had an interesting visit on my site today. One of my projects. It's one of them. From the Ministry of Public Works. I'm almost laughing because this is amazing. I put in an inspection for columns and tie beam. And I had to pull it up to figure out what date when the person showed up. The date I put in the inspection was the 28th of May, 2026. Today is the 9th of July. They showed up to do the inspection. Now, their service standard, written on the very back of the form, is that the Ministry of Public Works have 48 hours to come and inspect your site. Again, I made the application on the 28th of May, 2026. It is July 9th, 2026. The entire June passed. 9 days into July. They showed up on the site to do the inspection. Two things popped out of my mind when the gentleman asked me, We had to inspect the tie beams and the tie columns and belt beam. I said, well, you can see that they're already poured. You poured them? I said, well, let me ask you a question. If someone tell you show up to the church in the morning to get married, would you stay there a month and 9 years waiting for them to show up? Or would you think at some point in time they're not either interested in getting married to you or you're just the biggest fool out there? That is your service standard. That's not my service standard. You should wait. I said, you should be here in 48 hours. Oh, well, we don't have enough cars. Seems like a personal problem to me. Seems like a problem for the Ministry of Public Works. I even gave them a suggestion. This is when I spoke to Mr. Franklin Hall. I call names on the show, so guess, I call names. I said, Mr. Hall, the Ministry of Public Works is in the constituency of Fort Charlotte. The last time I counted, Fort Charlotte has a bus, two buses. Fort Charlotte, member of parliament, have several buses, and about 10 of those little cars that drive around with Fort Charlotte stickers and things all over it. Ask them for four. Y'all got 13 to 14 people in the inspectorate division, and y'all have one car. Something don't seem sensible. And then now, I understand why you take a month later. I get it, It's not my problem, though. 53 years later, the ministry that is responsible for inspecting the entire Commonwealth of the Bahamas has one car for New Providence, no offices for the Family Islands, and they think they could do the job of building control is beyond absurdly silly that we still think that's something they can do. And then we hear further on this week, we're breaking down shanty towns that were existing for 28 years. I kind of know why they got to be built, because we can't go and inspect anything because we don't have no cars. Something as simple as cars. We're not talking with rocket fuel that the Bahamas don't have a lot of. The Ministry of Public Works is almost opposite a car lot. We spent plus $50 million on traveling up and around. We couldn't allocate nothing in the budget for four cars, five cars. I don't know. I'm not trying to tell the minister to do the job. But what I am as a professional project manager, I can identify a problem and kind of tell you what the solutions are. So me and the three persons who came had a wonderful discussion. Of course, I shooed them off my site. Say, obviously y'all are a bit late. I've already poured. I still want my inspection because what I do have is photos. Oh, well, the photos are only if we don't come here in time. Well, I say that if really should turn out to be the reality because she didn't show up in town. So they left the site and then come back and say, now, it says we should be here in 48 hours, but it doesn't say you could complete the pour. I say, you know what the form also doesn't say? That I can't continue to work. So you got to figure that part out. Anyhow, I called the supervisor and said, yeah, I'll email you the photos. Please make sure I can pick up my inspection certificate tomorrow. That's one part of it. Now, secondly, this is the main crux of our conversation today. Less than a month ago, we had a show talking about the concern the Bahamian Contractors Association had with respect to safety. Because at that time, someone had an unfortunate incident and they fell to their death. It is now the 9th of July, on the eve of independence. And in response to what happened the last time, the Bahamian Contractors Association decided to partner with Bahama Safety Solution to conduct, on the 18th of this month, a fall protection safety course. Kind of seems really timely when today, at about 3-something, I got a notification from my phone. News stations are reporting someone fell working on the stadium and died. Now, before I introduce my guests, I'm going to make this public statement. If we believed that there was not an obvious need for safety training, the question I would have is, why are people falling and dying? See, I could, if this hadn't been events that happened less than 30 days apart, I could assume, yeah, we kind of know to take care of ourselves safely on heights. But not when we have two persons lose their life in less than 30 days. That tells me, obviously, there is a lack of appreciation of the risk, or absolute just ignorance of how to keep yourself safe. So, without further ado, I'm going to ask our guest, who is a professional at the highest order in safety, all aspects, but he's just decided to carve out a little piece of his global safety understanding to speak about fall protection. He is the facilitator of our training that happens on the 18th of July at, what's it called?
Epiphany
Anglican Church on Prince Charles.
Prince Charles.
And let me let our guest introduce himself.
Well, good evening, Bahamas. My name is Robert Ritchie from Bahamas Safety Solutions. Like Leonard said, I will be conducting fall protection training for them, which would be now next Saturday.
Yep,
next Saturday. Spanning for most of the day on Saturday. And what we're hoping to accomplish is, I'm not looking to bring awareness to the need for safety training, especially when it comes to fall protection. What I'm hoping to do is to actually properly train the people that show up on how to use fall protection equipment.
Love that.
Okay? Because, you know, we have enough companies now where you have the larger construction companies in the Bahamas and even the mid-sized construction companies, they should have a working in heights policy. Okay? Which means that if you're on a scaffold, if you're working on a roof, if you're working on a bridge, if you are working up in a boom truck, that's working at heights,
mm-hmm.
Okay? So you should have a working at heights policy for that. Within that working at heights policy, you should have a fall prevention system. Because when we talk about a fall prevention system, we're talking about wearing harnesses, using anchor points, mm-hmm. Right? Using lanyards. And the different types of anchor points, the different types of lanyards, and so forth,
mm-hmm.
All right? And also we're talking about, if you're using scaffolding, how do we attach to the scaffolding? How do we secure the scaffolding? What type of anchor points we want to use? And all of these things needs to be discussed, and they, more importantly, they need to be used. The gentleman that died at the sports center today, and he died.
And he died. He did not die.
He died, okay? He fell from scaffolding. The guy that died in Pinewood, he fell from scaffolding.
Yep.
Okay? The guy that died at the fill pit, he wasn't on a scaffold, but he fell from heights.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And that seems to be a serious issue within the Bahamas.
Mm-hmm.
People falling from heights.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't seem, and by we, I mean the government just does not seem to take this matter seriously.
Seriously enough. And that's something that I'm concerned about, the lack of. Now, again, I don't expect every time something happens, there is a national response, right? I don't expect that. However, because the Bahamian Contractors Association works intimately with almost every government agency. We thought that there would have been some kind of reaching out to us and say, hey, do we need to talk about increasing awareness? Do we need to talk about how do we prevent something like this? There was nothing. So the BCA decided, you know what? We're going to do something about it. And we reach out to you. Because we thought that one death is too much already. Now to have two in less than 30 days. Now we're at five until the one yesterday. Construction-related deaths for the year. We're just in July. This is crazy.
I'm not 100% sure about this because we don't track these numbers. But I think on a we might have the highest rates of industrial deaths within our region, the Caribbean region.
And given the size of our population, you may be right.
Capita basis. You know?
And what you would tell our listening audiences, almost 99% of it is avoidable.
Yeah, you know, the challenges when you're dealing, here's the thing about when it comes to safety training. No company is going to willingly do it. All right, they're going to do the basic stuff. Hey, I want you to wear some steel-toe boots. I want you to wear a hard hat. I want you to wear some gloves.
Yeah.
That's fine, okay? That's going to stop from you bucking your toe and from you getting some splinters,
mm-hmm.
okay? But when you start talking about, but it's stuff like this working at heights, when you fall and you could die, these are the things that the government has to put pressure on companies. And not just put pressure on companies, but they need to make sure that they have the same way the Ministry of Works goes out there and inspects your foundation,
mm-hmm.
they need to go out there and have their own safety unit. Call it whatever you want, okay? Their own safety unit, go out there and let there be real consequence to whomever breaks these laws.
There are none.
One thing I always tell, you know, people always call me and they'll be like, oh, you know, Mr. Richie, you do OSHA training? There's no such thing as OSHA training. OSHA is a set of laws.
Yeah.
All right?
OSHA, the United States of America.
In the United States of America. OSHA is a federal agency.
Absolutely.
Now, OSHA sets laws that you have to follow.
In the United States of America.
Now, one thing I'll guarantee you, if you don't follow those laws, they will fine you heavily.
Yes.
All right? And that is something that we need to start doing.
Yes, and to that point, we spoke about this, Debbie and I, on last show. You know, the engineers, I'd call an architect, water to ask you, is it OSHA certified? And my position on it is, I want to say that it is, but even if it isn't, what does that matter? Because OSHA is Occupation, Health, and Safety of the United States of America. We're dealing with Occupation, Health, and Safety in the Commonwealth of the Bahamas.
And let me also tell you this, and this is something that Bahamians need to understand. You know, I went to St. Louis University
mm-hmm.
to get my certification. OSHA tells you on their website, to someone like me who gets my safety training in the United States, to not put OSHA on your certificates. OSHA, one thing all of my professors told me, OSHA does not certify anything or anybody. They just set the laws.
They just the laws.
They don't certify that you know what you're doing. Now, St. Louis University does,
mm-hmm.
or the University of South Florida,
mm-hmm.
or what they call a OSHA Training Institute, mm-hmm. Institute Centers.
But OSHA does not.
But OSHA does not do that. So when people call me and they say, oh, well, can I get some OSHA training? There's no such thing. Okay?
So where did they get the idea from? Where does the novice person think that OSHA certification is coming from OSHA?
Because they think... Because you naturally identify OSHA with safety.
Mm-hmm.
So in their mind, they think that OSHA actually produces safety training or offers guidelines.
Not recognizing that OSHA, and we need to say it for the persons who are listening and don't understand what we're talking about. We're in the construction space, so we've dealt with OSHA our entire lives. OSHA stands for Occupational Health and Safety Administration.
Yes.
That's what people don't understand.
Yes.
That's an agency within the federal government, which one job is to ensure that Americans work safely. That's the agency that does that.
And they cover three industries.
Yep.
Construction.
Yep.
General industry.
Yep.
And maritime.
That's the job.
Okay. None of them, nowhere in there that it says anywhere that, oh, this also covers the Commonwealth of the Bahamas.
It does not.
Okay? What we need to do is now, mind you, and this is something that, you know, as a member of the Bahamas Safety, Bahamas Association of Safety Professionals, mm-hmm. one of the things that we have preached is that OSHA is a good template. You could use yeah. that, mm-hmm. okay, as a template. But we have to build our own safety regulations.
And this is something right? I tell people all the time. It's the same reason when we use, and I talk about it all the time from the construction space, AIA contracts. AIA stands for American Institute of Architects. And once you start with the word American and the project location is in the Commonwealth of the Bahamas, you already have a problem. While it's a template, jurisprudence tell you it is every the letter of it and the intent of it could be perceived. But the management of that contract have to be applicable to the laws of the Commonwealth of the Bahamas. For example, you will see inside the AIA document, it talks about workers' compensation. Robert, do we have workers' compensation in Bahamas? That word, workers' compensation. We do not. We have NIB. So if I'm a judge and I'm looking at something, the workers' compensation or the N whatever form, and they call it all kind of state form, or they have all kind of taxes and stuff.
Okay.
None of that is applicable to the Commonwealth of the Bahamas.
None.
And at 53 years, and this is why I want the conversation to be broader and more national. At some point in time, and I want people to listen to me, we got to grow up. I am a pre-independence baby. I was born in 73. And I just getting comfortable telling people I just 50. And I know how it feels to be a kid, and know how it feels to be a young adult, and know how it feels to be a 20-something, 30-something. And I certainly know how it feels to be 50. At some point in time, you have to grow up. We can no longer be this wonderful, on paper sounding nation while we're borrowing everyone else's stuff. And at the same time, pounding our chest that we're so smart. We got rocket scientists even now these days. We got the best athletes in the world. We got everything the best. But apparently, we don't have the best politicians who would sit down and actually draft laws for this country. We are borrowing laws from everyone else. We got to grow up at some point in time. I hope to live to see a day when we do, but we're not there yet.
I think that at this point, you know, the thing that truly bothers me about the Bahamas is that we continuously have these issues. We continue to have these incidents and accidents. People continue to lose their lives. And not just in the construction industry, but in all different industries. And we still make little to no progress.
No. What do you mean the big word that we... said we are living in the time of progress?
Yeah, we're
building on progress?
We just...
Because we chose progress?
And let me tell you something. I spend, you know, I spent a good amount of my adult life being a ship's captain.
Mm-hmm.
And I sailed through the Caribbean and Central and South America. And a lot of these countries that we as Bahamians like to make fun about,
they
are far more organized
of course.
Than we are. Believe me when I tell you that.
Let me tell you something. The wife and I just came back from Panama. And it was almost, we were almost embarrassed. The ideas we thought we had about South American countries until we came to a Panama, which to me, in certain aspects, eclipses North America in some of the things they do. The smoothness of moving around the city, doing business, interacting, how their malls, I'm like, we never thought that's what a South American country would be until you visit it. So we have this idea of how we are, but in reality, when it meets us, we're more third world than we can appreciate. I'll say that. We have a very magnificent passport that allows us to travel. And unfortunately, most of us only use it to go to north. And I suggest that some of us use it to go further south. And see what we compete against, and I'll tell you, when we see what we compete against, we'll realize we're no match. But Robert, I want to go into two text messages. I got one text message that says, good evening, sir. Didn't get your name. My name is Leonard Sands. But from I was a child, when anyone was working on high buildings, they usually put a rope around their waist in case they fall. So why didn't the individual do that? Robert, you want to take that on?
Yeah, you know, I don't know who this individual is. I know they used to do that when they were building the Golden Gate Bridge in San Francisco. And let me also say this, and not to make light of the man dying, but if he had done that, he might have not. He probably might not have died. Okay.
Yeah. But he certainly would have been seriously injured.
He would absolutely. He would have been injured.
He would have been injured.
And the reality of it is that the gist of what you're saying with putting a rope around your body mm-hmm. is right, because that's what a harness is. Mm-hmm. It goes around your body, and a lanyard could be a rope, or it could be a breakaway piece of strong
cord or something.
Strong cord mm-hmm. and so forth. But what happens is it's what they call a personal fall arrest system. So it arrests your fall. It stops your fall. Is it painful? Yeah, it can be painful. You're not going to break anything. You might have a little bruise or something, depending on the force of which you've fallen. Mm-hmm. All right? But you're right. Back in the day, they used to be, I want to say this. The thing about safety, the cruel thing about safety is something needs to happen.
Before we can improve it.
Yeah. Okay? But the advantage of being in the Bahamas, the advantage of being so close to the United States and having the relationship to the United States that mm-hmm. we do have is that we can learn from their mistakes. Mm-hmm. To give an example, one of the fall prevention systems and fall protection is using a net. Mm-hmm. That was created at the Golden Gate Bridge.
Really?
Yeah. Because they were losing up to 15 people a week falling off the bridge.
Wow. That's a lot of manpower you're losing.
So, because you're talking about, they're building that at the turn of the 20th century.
Yeah.
Okay? And remember, OSHA wasn't started until 1973.
Yes.
A year you're very familiar with.
Yeah, yeah.
You see?
Yeah.
By Richard Nixon.
Yeah.
So, that's a long time between 1906
and 1973. That's 70 years.
So, they came up with this idea, well, okay, listen, let's just put a net underneath here
mm-hmm.
so we can stop losing these fellas.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they did.
Mm-hmm.
All right? We don't even have that.
No. We don't. And to your point, what we do have, because you could attest to this, we have several companies that sell personal fall arrest apparatus.
You could get... You have several companies that you could go and buy
a personal arrest device if you're working on the roof.
You get everything you need right now. You could go to CBS everything you need.
Yeah.
And I talk about everything you need. Now, some people, you know, you could go to R&R Welding and they have what you need. Mm-hmm. You could buy from them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could go to Bahamas Welding and Fire.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not a matter of you can. And
like, it's not available.
And listen, push come to shove, if you want. You could buy this thing online. Amazon for $26.
Yes, you could buy it online as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's not like this is expensive, you know.
But this brings us to why coming to the course next week, Saturday, is critically important. People also know you should use your seatbelts. And we still have accidents where when they find through the investigation, they weren't wearing the seatbelts. I was a part of the Dwight D. Eisenhower Fellowship Program, my whole 4 years in college. And what we did is every year, as we were a research grant, we did traffic surveys. And I kid you not, I would be shocked to how much persons in Florida, where we think everyone wears seatbelt, we just on the light taking note, are not wearing seatbelts. And so there was a whole campaign which started called Click at the Ticket. You remember that campaign?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
That was to let people know, if we see you without a seatbelt on, you can get a ticket.
Because
there was a spike in deaths in Florida from car crashes where persons were not wearing seatbelts. So I say this to say that. People knowing that there's a fall arrest system that they could buy, and people not purchasing it or using it, is because maybe they never got trained on what it actually does or how to use it. I believe that's part of it as well.
I think that is the largest part of it. Because unlike a seatbelt is fairly self-explanatory.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, this ain't complicated.
Yeah.
All right? Now, the thing about wearing a fall arrest system,
mm-hmm.
that's a bit more complicated because you need to have two or three different systems that need to work in unison.
In unison.
All right. So you have the harness. That's one part.
Mm-hmm.
Now you need something. You don't. Then you need an anchor part. Anchor point. That's another
mm-hmm.
part.
Mm-hmm.
Now you need something to connect the harness to the anchor point.
Mm-hmm.
That's the lanyard. That's mm-hmm. a third part.
Mm-hmm.
And then we also have to learn, well, okay, where am I going to put the anchor point? What type of anchor point am I going to use? Mm-hmm. What industry am I in? If you in, let's say if you're in the roofing industry, mm-hmm. easiest pie.
Mm-hmm.
Because you could take an anchor point, hammer that into a piece of plywood, mm-hmm. hammer that into a piece of
2x4 or a ridge line or something, and you
whatever.
Get a fixed anchor point.
Yeah. Something that could take 5,000 PSI.
PSI on a drop. Yeah.
That's it, okay? And you good. Now, let's say, for example, if you like when I used to do training with Rent-A-Kill,
mm-hmm.
that's a little bit more complicated for mm-hmm. them boys. Because if you just come in to tent somebody's house, they don't want you hammering nothing. So now you got to find a different way to do it, which is a bit more expensive.
Yeah.
But that's okay because tenting a house is a lot more expensive
mm-hmm. than installing,
than putting slapping up some plywood on a roof. Mm-hmm. You see what I'm saying? Because you can get everything you need. You get everything you need to work on a roof in construction
mm-hmm.
in Nassau for $50.
Mm-hmm.
Everything. You good. And you use that the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? But this is where the training comes in.
Yeah.
Okay, so now, how long does the lanyard need to be?
Mm-hmm.
Does it have to be an actual lanyard, or do we need to use rope?
Mm-hmm.
Are we going to have more? How many people are we going to have on the roof?
Mm-hmm.
How are they going to work together in this roof?
In this roof, yeah.
With all these ropes coming
from
around.
Cross, cross, yeah.
Do we need to have a central anchor point?
Mm-hmm.
You see? And this is where the training comes
mm-hmm.
in. Okay?
And that's what, you originally said, you're not so concerned with the awareness, you're more focused on training people how to use it.
Yeah, training.
And that's the most important. For us in the BCA, I want the awareness and the training because I find that if you're aware of the dangers, you're more inclined not to put yourself into danger. I said this before on another show. If someone told you today would be the last day you are on this earth because you're not prepared properly to go up on heights and have something happen, would you go up on heights? I wouldn't. But you don't even think about it. You know why? Because you haven't witnessed it. You haven't experienced it. And I often said, it's the same thing you said, Robert. We've been fortunate enough that we didn't have something great like the Golden Gate Bridge. And we have one or two structures, and we may have lost one person on Bahama. We may have lost one person on Lattice. But those are ones. The day we got 30 people die in construction, the policy for construction changes. But we have not had that in our 53 years. We've never had mass incidences that make us look at how we do things. So unfortunately, because we're still small enough and we're building things still moderately low scale, but we're kind of not when you look on our northern foreshore, we're doing 9 to 13-story and 14-story condo buildings. The incidences of falling from heights rises. That's the first thing. The good thing, though, we know that only the big guys are doing those projects. And like you mentioned before, they already got a safety policy. They already have a working with heights strategy, written policy on what they do. They got safety person who work for the companies. Yeah, we're not doing that. You're not going out there like that without a harness. Because they want to protect their company. They ain't going to get a lawsuit out there and lost their stuff. So that's part of the
mission. And the reality of it is for most of them, you know, the reason why they're doing it is, well, don't let me say that because that's unfair to them, okay? But you know, when you at that level,
yeah,
you know, you have insurance.
Yeah. Yeah.
And your insurance is going to require that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And you, whenever you work for, and you work with international partners, mm-hmm. they're going to say to you, okay, we need to see your health and safety policy.
Mm-hmm.
We need to see your environmental policy.
Mm-hmm.
All these things you need to have. Mm-hmm. And those are not really the guys that you see the accidents happening.
No.
You're talking
no.
about the big companies.
Yes.
Okay. You're talking about the mid-tier companies.
The
you're
mid-tier,
talking about
the
small guys.
Yeah.
Okay, who's going up and, like, they're doing a little renovation. They got to repair this person's roof and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
These are the people that you need, the government needs to lean on and enforce.
And
enforce these rules and regulations
and Robert,
whenever they have them.
That's where the Bayman Contractors Association has been steering our focus. For a lot of times, people always dub us the construction company for the big boys. And I often tell people, the big boys don't need the BCA. They got their part of the pie, whether the BCA exists or not. The smaller contractors need the BCA. The smaller contractors benefit from the training, benefit from the services we provide, benefit from the awareness, the access, and the programs that we put on for them. The big guys have that. They've always had that. Because you're not doing $100 million of work a year. They are. And I can tell you what happens when you got that kind of volume of work. You can pay for every, you get consultants coming every year. And Robbie, you know that because you're some of the consultants that they use. They could pay for consultants to come and train their staff at $7,500 and $200. You got staff of three. You're not paying, I can tell you, I'm paying Robert Trees to train three people. No. Okay. So that's the thing that you don't get. And they have those.
No, because the thing is, if you have a project and you make it a $40 million project, what do you care if you pay someone $20,000 or $25,000?
Yeah. That don't mean nothing to you.
To come and do some safety training.
Yeah.
You already factor that into your budget.
Yeah.
But if the little small guy
that's
driving around town in this little pickup truck, and he got a little crew of two or three people, that's the struggle. But those are the people that need to take advantage of this training now.
And what I like about this training, critical training, and I really want to call it critical training, is that it's absolutely necessary for everyone. I talk to our contractors out there, you know, wearing the hat of the president is really fun for me because I get to talk to everybody, the big guy and the small guy. And what I recognize is the same thing you said, Robert. Everyone, I could guarantee you, if I meet 10 contractors and you ask them if they have a pair of scaffolds, every contractor has scaffolds. And I can tell you one thing with scaffolds, if you have them, you use them. So people go on scaffold. Do you know to properly tie off on a scaffold? Do you know to use that scaffold properly? You're doing a two-story building. You're going to have three flights of scaffold. Someone's going to be three flights of scaffold in the air. That's 15 feet. You can die from 15 feet if you fall on your head.
But not only do you have the scaffold, but what are you using for planks? Would you use 2x12s? Which is what we like to use a lot. They just slap them across the scaffold, and then they climb up on the scaffold. Does the scaffold have proper ladders? Are the scaffolds properly secured? Is one of the things that we're going to talk about next Saturday. You know, anchor point is only as good as what it's secured to.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you just put up a scaffold, like let's just call it a good old fashioned Bahamian scaffolding. Mm-hmm. So we just put that up. You could hook your lanyard onto that all you want. Because when you fall, the scaffold's
falling too. Yeah.
You know, I have a welder that I do work with, and I remember he always had a great idea. Because he uses harnesses when he works at ice, whenever we work on silos or whatever, he welds the scaffolds onto the silo.
Really?
Because he's like, yeah. He said, when I finish, I just cut it off.
Mm-hmm.
So I know one thing, if they fall, that silo ain't going nowhere.
No.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And these are the different things, and this is something else that I tell people when they call me and they ask me about OSHA training.
Mm-hmm.
You know, OSHA is fantastic, but they don't understand what it's like to work in the Bahamas. Okay? Mm-hmm. I did some training for some guys. They own bucket trucks.
Mm-hmm.
And I was telling them, you know, what do we have a lot of in the Bahamas in the summer? We got a lot of rain, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what comes to that rain? We got squalls.
Mm-hmm.
And those squalls will blow sometimes for about 15, 20 minutes. They'll blow hurricane force winds.
Mm-hmm.
You know? That don't happen a lot in the United States.
No.
You're not going to find that
mm-hmm.
in any safety training in the States. Mm-hmm. But that's something that's almost unique to the Bahamas,
yeah.
You know, so we know, okay, when that comes up, when you see that wind start to blow, you got to calm down. Okay?
You need to calm down.
You need to come down off the roof. You got to bring the bucket down or whatever. And these are the things that you need to
be aware of. And part of just on that conversation too, Robert. Now, common sense is what's interesting, which I find it that we say common sense. We don't apply it in all instances.
No.
For example, you're applying, let's call it ice and water shield on a roof. You're getting ready to reshingle the roof. It rains. After it rains, I see guys climbing the scaffold to go back on the roof. No safety harness, no tie-down point, no nothing. And I'm like, this plastic-like membrane is now wet, and you're going to walk on it with a bundle of shingles on your shoulder to start shingling. What part of that you think makes sense? We don't train. So people, the first thing you have to think about, is this safe? for me to do right now? That's the first question you should ask. I find we don't ask that question a lot. Is this safe? And if you start with that question, you generally end up with something that either makes you think or you decide, you know what, how do I make it safe?
But you're absolutely right. But one of the things that we like to, you know, and I also understand when people, you know, let's say, for example, you have your home and you're trying to get something fixed on a budget. Mm-hmm. I appreciate that. To give an example. I had a guy, a few years, I gave him a chance to fix a leak in my roof. Mm-hmm. And he brings an older gentleman, I think he's an older Haitian gentleman, and he comes, he shows up in shorts, T-shirt, and flip-flops.
Mm-hmm. To go on the roof?
To go on the roof.
Wow.
And I was like, what you say? Well, he got it. And he's going, what he's going to do now is he's going to use a cutlass.
To do
to
what?
To remove the shingles.
Why?
I was like, but hold on. I told you that there's a couple of soft patches in
the roof.
What you doing? You see? Now, the thing is, I understand, okay, you know what? You want to get a deal.
Mm-hmm.
You're trying to save some money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but my thing is this. You can find someone who can charge you the same amount of money.
Yeah.
And you don't have to deal with that.
Yeah. Yeah.
You don't have to deal with that. Because if that man falls through your roof, he might also fall through your ceiling.
Yes.
So now you have a bigger problem.
Yes.
On top of the fact that you had a man fall from the roof, fall from the ceiling.
With a cutlass in the yard.
I tell
people all the time, you want to see some really interesting things? Come on the construction site. Now, going to this point, because I'm going to just another text message. It says, Leonard, one car from the Ministry of Public Works Inspection Department. Yes, one car. And they've had one car for the last about 20 years. That's the part that drives me. My wife, and I can say, I know she's listening. She said, I argue with so much people on Facebook. You know why? Because somehow by myself, I want to educate at least a quarter of the 450 to maybe 500,000 Bahamians that when you hear politicians talk absolute garbage, please run them from around your house when they're talking about the wonderful things they're doing. Because if someone told me, Robert, I got 15 people working whose job is to go in all areas of New Providence and do inspections every day, but we have one clown car, someone enough brain should say, maybe we need more than one car. And for that to be going on for 20 years, only two things come to my mind. Either the management of that department does not care, or the person who provides the management with the budget, the minister, does not care. I'd love to believe that both of those answers are incorrect. But 20 years later, I'm forced to believe that I gotta be right and they're wrong. Ladies and gentlemen, I hear the music coming on before I really get into it, because on the eve of independence, I need some independent thought, because this level of dumbness cannot continue where I'm still in this Bahamas that we think we're independent, but our brains are somehow the only part that's still detached to somewhere else. I don't understand. So we'll be back after this break.
Main purpose for a lot of customers coming in and out these doors is because of the relationship built with them. Once they're comfortable, they could relate to me better.
We don't only sell paint. We sue people.
Some customers need extra patience.
Whatever your paint or patience needs, the entire Sherwin Williams Paints team are ready to show you some good customer service.
Sherwin Williams Bahamas. Find color in every day.
All right, now the last people supposed to answer this, either their brain was frizz or a couple of screws was loose.
Not me, bro. I sharp. I get this.
Yeah, you sharp as a button, man.
All right, I can see just how sharp y'all is, because you skip a button on your shirt. Well, anyhow. All right, question is, it doesn't rust.
Uh-huh.
No corrosion. It's lighter and stronger than its opponent. What is it?
I know, but it's steel?
Nope. Wrong answer. Fiberglass rebar. Y'all ain't sharp.
Hey, go ahead and say that note.
You don't even know what that means.
All right, here's what makes fiber rebar a no-brainer compared to steel. It don't rust. Steel rebar does rust and crack up your wall like biscuit. Two, fiber rebar is lighter than steel. Steel rebar is way more heavier, so that means it costs you more money and labor. And three, coated steel is more expensive than fiber rebar. And with cheap steel, you still have to paint it. Still costs you money. For more information, call Odd Heavy Equipment and Development today at 603-4506 or 822-9527. Fiber rebar is better than steel.
The all-new CBSBahamas.com is faster, smarter, and we've made it even easier to browse our inventory of over 11,000 products. Earn reward points with every online purchase. Check out our new AI-powered chat assistant, available 24/7. You can even select them for items to be delivered to your house, job site, or the boat. Our Family Island customers are loving it. Build beautiful throughout the Bahamas with the new CBSBahamas.com.
The light goes out, the AC is silent, and your family is left in the dark again.
You don't have to live like this. With a Cat generator from Machinery and Energy Limited, your home stays powered, no matter the storm. Protect your peace, protect your home. Always on, always ready. Visit me-ltd.com or call today, Machinery and Energy Limited, 1 College Avenue, Oaksfield at 323-5701. Be ready before the next storm hits.
When I wake up in the morning and I take a walk outside, I see the sunshine, I see a new day, and that feeling puts a smile right on my face. I know just what to do, go to the paint place. So if you want to paint it right the first time, go to the paint place, stop at the paint place. And if you want it to last a lifetime, go to the paint place, stop at the paint place.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
We're back to Nail It on Guardian 96.9 FM. And before I get into anything, let me quickly, I'm doing everything today. Debbie decided to leave me by myself, so I can have fun. I'm going to go to our sponsors and they make sure to be on the air, spreading the news about safety, promoting the BCA and construction in the Bahamas. And our sponsors we'd like to thank this afternoon is ART Development, CBS Bahamas, Sherwin-Williams, M&E Limited, and Bahamas Safety Solutions. And we have the president and CEO of Bahamas Safety Solutions today in the studio, Mr. Robert Ritchie. Hey, Robert, we were having a wonderful discussion offline, and I like to bring our offline conversations to the air. So, because you got properties in Abaco and in Nassau. Abaco, for the general public's, you know, and I say this is for the general public's knowledge. I don't think we think about the Bahamas the way maybe some people think about the Bahamas. I think of Bahamas this way. We have islands, and we have the government of Bahamas who has responsibility for the people on these islands. And I hear all this talk. The politics of this country is very sad because we lie so well. And I say the word lie. We lie to people. You can't tell me you care about me. And I have an event that could kill me. And you didn't prepare for that. It's like my parent couldn't have me living in a house with no roof. And I catch the cold every night and they told me how much she loved me. But she has a Maserati outside in the yard that could put a roof on my house. But we're living with the night draft and the rain and all. So let me give an example. On the island of Abaco, which I had lived, and I have property there, and you have property there, Robert, is there a fire truck? Yes or no? Just a yes or no.
Yes.
Yes.
There's a fire truck.
Who owns the fire truck?
Not the government of Bahamas.
Hold on. The place where Bahamans live, that is the place where Bahaman pays taxes to the government of Bahamas.
I don't know who actually owns it, but I know it's donated.
It was donated.
Yeah. So it's owned by the community.
We have an $11 plus billion budget.
Yeah.
In New Providence, we got one working fire truck at my last count. In Bimini, recent fires. They got no fire truck. And you know, hats off to the great effort and work that my good friend, Member of Parliament, the Honorable Randy Rule, did in supporting the efforts of toting buckets like we're back in the caveman days to throw on the roofs of buildings from the sea to try to get the fire from going into another building, which looked just absolutely wild for 2026. But I give him hats off for trying, bro.
You know, let me jump in there for a minute. That's and this wild. Is the thing that has blown my mind.
It's
okay?
Wild.
Because I have been to Bimini twice for the year.
Yeah.
Okay? Places like Bimini and Abaco have a significant expat investment. Okay?
Almost a billion.
Significant. Yeah. All right. For people that, and the problem, one of the issues we have here in the Bahamas is that, and especially with Nassauians, they think Nassau. Yes. But a day like, give a perfect example. We see how you had July 4th, right?
Mm-hmm.
America, Florida, they start moving from the day before.
Yes.
They're going to spend July 4th in Bimini.
Yes.
And they can ball out.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to tell me that we don't have a way to fight fire?
On an island.
Now, you understand how small Bimini is, right?
I understand. I've been there.
Like, I mean, you can almost fight the whole fire in Bimini with one horse.
But they do not have a fire truck. And so, just to bring case in point to that, I understand we have 12 fire trucks now on the way from Germany. I want to put it all from Germany. I just decided to Google fire trucks for sale in the United States. Canada comes up. I can get a fire truck. Very nice fire truck, bells and whistles like the one in New York, for $250,000. If I wanted to do that, I could also get a fire truck for $44,000. I could get top-of-the-line fire truck for $798,000. The point is, I can buy fire trucks in North America, my friends. Why would I go to Germany? You could speak German. I can't speak German. But I tell you one thing, the instructions are going to come written in German.
In Deutschland?
Yes.
In Deutsch?
Who is making these decisions? Oh, I don't know. 53 years later, some card. I don't know. I'm trying to be respectful right now, but hold on. We got a caller, Robert. Caller, you're live. Go ahead.
My good friend, Emmett.
How are you, man?
Doing great. And good evening to the guests in the studio. Listen, let's look at this thing in its proper context. You talk about purchasing fire trucks from Germany. And you're absolutely correct, because we all know when you manufacture something in these countries, ordinarily the instructions come in the host country where these stuff are manufactured.
Mm-hmm.
Even though they may get that fire truck even cheaper, do they look at how what it costs to
maintain
move that fire truck from point A to point B? Do they look at the freight charges and the shipping charges, which will be added on to the price and everything? So at the end of the day, what I'm saying is, does it make any economical sense to go that cheap route and still at the end of the day, when all the taxes and all the charges and everything add up, you still come up to something whereas you could buy that same fire truck perhaps in North America or somewhere in the States? You know, these are the things we have to consider. My thing is, as I said today, every major, not even major, every family island that has an operating airport, whether it's a landing strip or whatever, because we know planes go in and out these places, every one of these destinations should have at least a fire truck and should have an ambulance on it.
And
I mean, it goes beyond just common sense.
Jeff,
and these things should be going on. Now, you talk about Abaco, you talk about Grand Bahama. These are major, what I would say, metropolis here in the Bahamas. There should be no less than at least two or three working fire trucks because of the size and the density of the population. There should be no less than three ambulances and a few working clinics
and
a hospital in these locations. Listen. And it is abhorring to realize that we're in 2026 and we're still talking about the simple basic necessities that we should have in these locations where the population is growing or has grown. This is ridiculous.
Well, Jeff, I will say something to your point. Let me add something to your point. At a minimum, and this is with the public, and that's why I'm glad we're on public radio for them to understand. At a minimum, every island should have two fire engines. Do you know why?
At minimum.
Do you know why? Let me tell you the reason why. If you're operating an airport, It is mandatory
that a fire truck is
that you have a fire truck at an airport. So for there to not be a fire truck on an island, now, if you don't count the one that's at the airport, that's something different. But at the very least, the fire truck have to be at an airport, no matter the size of the airport. Because exactly. What happens in the event of a plane crash? International FAA regulations require
a fire truck.
A fire truck at an airport.
No, no, but hold on, now. Let me.
That's an international requirement.
Let me try to get something there now. Remember now, that is not good. That is not under the purview of the government. That's under the airport authority, and they actually do have firefighting equipment. That's the only reason they do is because that's under the airport authority. So, for example, if you in Inagua, and you have a fire in Inagua, because I did this training, you know, they fight fire in Inagua.
Oh.
They have a water truck, a water delivery truck, that they use a trash pump out to the fire and fight the fire. There are no firefighters.
Oh, the water guys than the firefighters.
No, no, there's an old, like, it's like an old fuel truck. They convert it to a water truck.
It's a fire.
All right, and that's how they fight the fire, okay, in Inagua. Because before, Morton used to supply the fire truck. But the government does not even put a fire truck down there. You go to Crooked Island, you go to Landrill Point, you go to Spring Point, Auckland. There are no firefighting equipment down there. There's no fire trucks.
And but to all of this, we'll be talking with Robert and Jeff. We spend $11 billion we earn and spend in our budget.
Yeah.
And we can't find the money to put life-saving equipment in the islands where Bahamians inhabit.
Because we got to get it from Germany.
I would go on the verge and say it's not the matter that we cannot find the money. It all depends on where their priorities are.
Jeff is right.
Can find all this money to travel all around the world or do all these trips, increase the traveling budget. We can find all this money to do the celebrations, the independence, and all these other stuff. These are monies the Bahamian people are.
You're gonna tell me that we cannot form a relationship. I know we have a relationship with Broward County.
Yeah.
Because I did my firefighter training with Broward County. You're gonna tell me you can't go there and say, listen, we need fire trucks. You can tell me is because listen, it ain't a manual that is bothering me, you know. What has happened to machinery like
it breaks down. It breaks down. So
you know when I used to work for a company called Marine Tanker Services, and my boss, all he bought was Caterpillar.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, well, you know, I hear people say Detroit diesel is
cheaper.
Good. Mm-hmm. Mine is good. Mm-hmm. He's like, no. He said, because I get any part I need from Kelly's tractor right in Miami.
Mm-hmm.
So if your water pump breaks down 9 a.m. by 1 o'clock in the afternoon,
I could have done on
that in Nassau.
Yes.
That makes sense, eh?
It does. But
that makes sense.
It goes back to my point where we have not grown up yet. 53 years later, let me give persons a story about Germany. I have a good friend. His name is Mike. Mike, forget how to pronounce his last name. He's from Germany. He's in the Bahamas, 30 years. Do you know why he's in the Bahamas? BPL or BEC bought an engine from Germany. He's German. So much so, he came with the engine to do the routine maintenance. He's been here 30 years. We decided to buy an engine from Germany. Stole him from BC because it was cheaper to hire the guy than to keep bringing somebody routine maintenance on a generator that's powering 500 acres. You'd rather hire the employee than pay the fees to bring someone down every quarter. That's what happens when you buy now. You're buying 12 fire trucks from Germany. You better buy the German who's coming with the fire truck. Yes, I just want somebody, please.
And listen,
make better decisions.
All them engines in BPL, all them is mix and match because all of those are different makes and brands. But if you go to St. George's Power for Spanish Wells, you know what they got up there? Caterpillar. Because when they buy that from Caterpillar.
Yeah, of course.
And fellas come from Peoria, Illinois, the headquarters of Caterpillar, and they confirm that engine, they put that engine in place, and they roll with that engine.
And I
want to get them boys in Spanish Wells. They ain't no low
shed issues. And I want public to understand, we're not bashing. We're simply pointing out.
No, yes, I am. I am, and I can be honest because it costs a lot to live in the Bahamas.
Yes,
and I don't have an issue with that, okay? Because, you know, we have expenses there that other Caribbean countries don't have. Okay, so if you live in Jamaica, you only got to deal with one or two airports.
Mm-hmm.
We got 15 to 20 airports. Mm-hmm. I understand the challenges that are there. But when you do things like, oh, we're going to buy fire trucks out of Germany, that is what causes me to get upset.
Or manual ambulances.
Manual transmission ambulances.
Where our population by man
drives
automatic cars.
Yeah, a little bit. I just need you to say, you know what, listen, at the end of the day, this ain't good for the country. Let's just see. I think this is a better deal for the country here. Because there's no way. I don't care if you save $1 million buying these fire trucks. There is no way that is a better deal than getting from the United States.
Or you buy the fire trucks, but you don't have the parts, you don't have the servicing, and you can't understand the manual. Do they still do the thing they were intended to do? And that's my question. Robert, we got next call. Call you live. Go ahead.
Yeah, good evening, Mr. Sands, and your guest.
Yeah, 52. What's going on?
I'm missing the harmonious voice of Debbie D. Let her know her voice is very therapeutic.
I will certainly let her know when she gets back.
Too long, Leonard. Yeah, but I just... Hello?
Yes, sir. We are.
Yeah, I like what you guys are talking about. And just as a small input, because Jeff and I would have came from the hotel. I work in the power plant at the hotel for years, mm-hmm. the boiler room, the chiller rooms, et cetera, right? So I work around 900-ton chillers, et cetera, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so what happens is I'm familiar with equipments, and well, you're talking about manuals, et cetera, et cetera. So I know you really know what you're talking about. So I would have dealt with tree and refrigeration, right?
Mm-hmm.
Culligan reverse osmosis, right? And Cleaverbrook spoilers.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happens is they would bring over Cleaverbrook personnel, tree and personnel, from me and train, T-R-A-N, you know the train emblem, and Culligan. And they would train us, right? And sometimes they would send us over. And so I was one of those that they would always train from the factory. Even when they worked at BFS, they would bring people over, mm-hmm. the manufacturers, to really give us the whole electrical schematics, the whole rundown, make the machine simple then. So for me, the train refrigeration system is one that requires at least about 7 years training. So they would bring over a guy named Bob. I think he's over at Atlantis now.
Mm-hmm.
He could vouch for me. I was one of those guys who was always interested in learning. I'm never impeded saying something is too hard. You understand what I'm saying, Leonard?
I got you.
So I know the significance of that. And so these are the protective devices, et cetera, because these equipment cost a lot of money. But as you guys speak about the fire engines, what you guys are saying is totally correct. So if you're going to invest in these things, the person has to be trained. You have to become familiar with the manual, and you have to follow the guidelines and also maintenance. And so what I really call on is something that frightened me that I heard Dr. Andre Rollins mention. And so within my experience within the electrical field, I know that an emergency switch, right? The emergency switch, right?
Mm-hmm.
The transfer switch is what they call it. In the hotel, some guys didn't actually know that there is a physical switch, a lever that you pull when the automated transfer switch doesn't kick in.
Mm-hmm.
And I was surprised. And I was appalled. And so Dr. Rollins was saying, the hospital was saying there were some problems with the emergency switch. But what I'm saying is,
they could go on down there and throw the switch themselves.
Pull it down manually,
mm-hmm.
to disconnect the BEC side.
And yet turn on the generator side. Yeah.
And so within the switch box, when you open up the big panel, you'll see some little dials look like they have little dials on them. They have seconds in them. So that'd be determined how the delayed response for the generator to kick in, and also when the current kicks back in, the generator have to go on a cool down period. And so I was surprised that something as simple as that, they have to explain that to me because I didn't understand it at all.
Well, 52, maybe it's because the persons inside the engineering department or who's responsible have not been trained either.
Yeah, but it all comes to
training.
Not learning, but what I'm saying is, for me, I want them to explain it to me because I'm a citizen. I'm trying to figure out, if you have a problem with the emergency switch, you didn't mention that there's a manual switch that you could pull down. So, I mean, I'm trying to figure out if it was a problem. To me, it has to be a lie because you can't tell me because someone doesn't know that there's a physical switch. All right, the generator isn't kicked in automatically. So, what do you just sit there?
Miss 52, listen, I got to let you go, 52, but I got to say this. If you don't know what you don't know, you don't know. I say this all the time. The greatest thing that we have a challenge with is we believe people know. And going back to our point about safety, I have to believe that with two incidents where somebody fell to their death, somebody didn't know enough to cause whatever they're doing to be a lot safer. I could, that's my assumption. I don't have to be right about that. I don't have to be right about that. I often tell my wife this all the time. She's getting nervous when I drive in Florida. I went to school in Florida. I got a driver's license in Florida. I could drive in Florida. However you want to talk with my driving skills, I've never been in a track accident in Florida. That's evidence that I kind of figured this thing out, right? I've seen two people die in 30 days, Robert. That tells me something is not, I believe it is. Closing thoughts.
I think we are to the point now in the Bahamas to where we need to be really serious about safety regulations.
I agree.
And it's not about, we have to start with safety training, but the only way that people will take it seriously is if the government installs and institutes real safety regulations and enforces it.
Now, Robert, to that point, this is where we have a lot of fighting to do, because we've been advocating for some 40 plus years for the licensing of contractors, which obviously raises the standard for everyone participating in the industry, and the government has not been a willing partner in that. So trying to now move the dial even further and include safety as a mandate, I think that's it's necessary, but I think that's another fight. But what I want to do is give persons who are listening just some of the information about the safety fall protection training that's happening at Epiphany Anglican Church, Frenchell Drive. The course runs from 8 till 4 p.m. on Saturday, the 18th of July, because Robert doesn't need to be there all day, but he's going to be there all day sacrificing his Saturday. The cost of the training is $275. I registered myself today, and my board is already registered, because we're going to lead by example. If we're going to be sitting there in the course learning from Robert, we want everyone to say, hey, if the people in the BCA are sitting down learning, it's that important. It's that important. And if you want information about it, I want you to call 56-8850 or email admin@behamancontractors.com. But most importantly, please, 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 if you own a construction company, if you want to do better business in construction, if you want to keep your employees safe, please register for the course. And you could register for the course by going on www.behamancontractors.org and registered. I did everything online, so it's online. Again, www.behamancontractors.org, and you register for the course. And it's been another exciting show. Debbie sends her love all the way from Canada. I didn't ask her to bring me anything, but if she does, I will try to share it with all the listeners. And we're out here again. Good night, everyone.
When I wake up in the morning and I take a walk outside, I see the sunshine, I see a new day, and that feeling puts a smile right on my face. I know just what to do, go to the paint place. So if you wanna clean it right the first time, go to the paint place, stop at the paint place. And if you want it to last a lifetime, go to the paint place, stop at the paint place.
When we started Storm Frame Windows in 1999, we wanted to fabricate an impact-rated product to compete with the Florida market, and we've done this. There's no fabricator or vendor from Florida that can do what we can in the Bahamas. Because we fabricate locally and we're a local-based company, we have the capability to provide better customer service than our competitors. With all the worldwide supply chain issues, we at StormFrame have improved our fabrication process and have invested in stock to be able to produce our orders in 4 weeks. We also keep in stock over 400 windows and doors at standard sizes for walk-in customers to purchase. Our professional sales staff is here to assist you with the complete purchase and installation. We also service and ship to the outhouses.
Thank you for your support. support Bahamas.
Thank you for your support, Bahamas.
Hey, y'all ever the new fiber steel on the market?
Yeah.
It don't rust.
Gone are the days of cracking spoils. That is a very easy to install. Fiber steel is here to stay. No more repairing a breakup wall. FRP's the new steel in town. No salty air would ever break down. Rust or corrosion, that's in the past. In the Bahamas, now we're built to last. Say goodbye to rust forever, man. Goodbye to corrosion by the ocean, man. Say goodbye to rust forever. No rust, no corrosion. Fiber steel in our future, brother, man. FRP's in our future.
For more information on FRP concrete reinforcement products, call our development today at 603-4506 or visit our Facebook and iDevelopment BFRP. Say goodbye to rust forever.
Customer service can be a little struggly sometimes in our beautiful Bahama land. But let Dee Dee and Shelley tell you about how Sherwin Williams does customer service.
It's not only better in the Bahamas for the tourists, you know. Seeing where I would treat a tourist that come here, to seeing me, I treat my Bahamian customers. And I service them with a bright smile. I just love working for Sherwin Williams. If I can make any customer happy in any wish way, I'll do it every day. Customers is the love of my life, okay?
Sherwin Williams Paints. Find color in every day.